When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Good morning and welcome to Plugged Into Long Island on 102.3 WBAB and 106.1 BLI. I'm Allie Alley, and today we are talking with the CEO of Long Island Select Healthcare, Dr. James Powell. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is great to be here.
Of course. And just tell us, for our listeners, what exactly is the Long Island Select Healthcare, and what is your role at the company?
So Long Island Select Healthcare is a fairly qualified health center. So we have actually 8 offices throughout Suffolk County. We go from Central Islip all the way to Riverhead. And we cater towards people who are underserved. So they may have no insurance, Medicaid, may have developmental disabilities, autism, Down syndrome, mental health disorders. And I'm fortunate enough to be the CEO, so I oversee all the programs, and we offer services, everything from medical, dental, psychiatry, PT, OT, speech, so a wide range of services for those who need them most in our county.
And how do you guys differ than a typical doctor's office?
I think one of the big things for us is that we will see anybody, regardless of your ability to pay. So a visit could be as cheap as $15 to have a tooth removed or see a psychiatrist. It's all based on sliding scales. Those with insurances we accept and we see, but you know, we're open to anyone. So our limitations are few, and we try to create access and create an opportunity that we're better than banks and better than supermarkets. I think health centers in general have this kind of feeling where you can get milk and bread any time of the day you want. So you can go to your bank as much as you want, but your health centers aren't open as often as you'd like them to be. So as we've kind of grown, we've realized that, you know, we not only want to be available on site, but you know, how can we offer telemedicine, virtual care, and create opportunities for anyone, regardless of your ability to pay or whatever your zip code is or how you can get to your appointment, that we can kind of get to you.
You mentioned virtual care. Is this something that kind of was new because of the pandemic, or is this something that you guys have always offered?
Well, we are fortunate that we started actually in 2014, and we actually were part of a grant that went through until 2017 through the Department of Health, and actually saved the state a couple million dollars having patients avoid going to the emergency department. It was a wonderful experience. It was a great opportunity, but unfortunately for us, the government wasn't paying for the services. So we said, you know what, we'll still provide the service because we realize there's tremendous quality associated with it and tremendous value. So we actually had anticipated providing this service for free. And then as unfortunate as the pandemic has been for all of us, it created an opportunity for us to kind of create more programs and now be allowed to be reimbursed for those services and really get to the patients and get to the community and increase access. So there has been a little bit of a silver lining in this chaos that's unfolded over the last few months.
So what are you able to do with the virtual care program? Has it changed what you're able to do in person, or What have been the positives and the limitations?
So I think the thing to think about with virtual care and telemedicine is not separate. It's integrated in your whole program. So, you know, most of us and health centers really should have some sort of a hybrid model. I think this is what we've learned through this process, that this should be part in-office visits, whether it's for medical visits, mental health visits, but also you can utilize some of the other services, and whether it's video visits or Bluetooth-enabled equipment to check blood pressures and oxygen levels. So it's really opened up our eyes to capabilities that we can look at, not just how often I see someone on site in our quote-unquote brick-and-mortar structure, but how do we create opportunities to kind of create more quality touches. So it may just be reaching out through a phone call to check on someone to see how they're doing. It could be a video visit, could be giving someone blood pressure machines and scales to keep track of their condition. So it really becomes a whole kind of program and a larger platform. And I think that's what this has really brought to light, is that you can provide better care easier with more quality touches by creating opportunities for patients to be seen when they need to be seen, as often as they need to be seen, and at the depth of the care they need, whether it's a front desk staff, a nurse, or a provider. So it's really opened up the opportunity to create a lot more value for patients.
And how many patients do you guys see? Because I know you said you have many different locations, right?
So we're responsible now for a little under 7,000 patients. The interesting thing for us is the pandemic reduced our on-site visits to now we're about 33% of our normal. So the rest, the other 60+% are actually through virtual care. So we're doing more video visits for those. So we've really tried to do the best we can, because some of our patients are in lockdown. They're part of group homes because they have complicated medical issues, cerebral palsy or Down syndrome, and they're not allowed to leave because they're more medically frail and compromised. So so really this has kind of changed the game. So we've been trying to reach them as much as possible. In fact, we're very fortunate that we won a grant through the FCC, which gave us about $480,000 to actually buy tablets and equipment to give to people, give to group homes, give to individuals who may not have access to it, so they can still get care. Even those who don't have insurance or have Wi-Fi, we'll be able to give them tablets and give them hotspots and access to care, which is really a great thing.
And you guys are a nonprofit organization, so do you accept donations?
Oh yeah, so we're we love any donation, anything from volunteering time with our food pantries to some of our health fairs, which this year will have to be virtual, to mentorships, to donation of supplies. We had a wonderful, wonderful dentist who gave us some supplies as he's retiring to help out with our dental equipment. We've been fortunate to get supplies for PPE, so the N95 masks. We were fortunate to get some of them as well. So yes, so donations are a big part of the nonprofit world, and we almost never turn those down when we get those opportunities.
And you mentioned volunteering and mentorship. How does someone apply to be a volunteer with you guys?
So right now we have on the website, you guys should go on, and there is a link that's, so it's www.lishcare.org. And one of the tabs actually has a volunteer button. And so we have students who want to be future nurses and doctors and dentists who have volunteered and shadowed with us. We've had individuals help us out with projects, whether it's through the websites or through outreach efforts. So there's really lots of opportunities. We're fortunate that we've paired up with some great universities, Hofstra's Masters of Healthcare Administration program. So they come on site and help us with programs. Stony Brook Social Worker Program, they come on site and do some virtual stuff with us for patients related to social determinants of healthcare. And needs based on issues maybe around drugs and alcohol. We have NYIT students starting in this month actually for mental health and psychiatry rotation. So we really try to be a robust opportunity, because it's great for the staff, because when we're with the students, it puts us on our A game, you know, so we learn more, we share more, and it kind of gives you a little more enthusiasm about how you can help those around you.
And those volunteer opportunities right now, those are probably more virtual, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's opportunity dependent. So I think that, you know, we want to be as safe as we can about the way we're set up. You know, it's in this difficult environment. you know, patients are getting 2 phone calls before they show up. They're getting their temperature checked. They're getting questionnaires. We're giving anybody masks. So yes, we definitely want to minimize some of the added staff or volunteers that aren't necessary, because there are staff that we have that have been working at home since the pandemic and may not come back until the end of the year. So we want to make sure everyone feels safe, whether you're a volunteer, whether you're a patient, or whether you're a staff member working for us. So, but we think that will start to ease up through the end of the summer and the fall. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned before that you guys see anyone, and that's one of the positives about this organization. So do you have to register as a patient if you come to one of your locations?
Yes, so everyone has to register. You know, one of the benefits that we have is because we're sponsored / supported by the federal government, they track all your data. So everyone's registered. They keep track of not just the patients you see, not the name specifically, but the demographics, but also they keep track of our outcomes. So we're actually tracked on how good we treat blood pressure, how good we treat diabetes. So the federal government, in terms of oversight through the Federal Department of Health Center, is actually very impressive. In fact, people probably don't realize that there's like 1,600 organizations like us in the country. About 1 in 12 people, or about 26 million people, receive care through federally qualified health centers. So they're really a big part of the healthcare system that people don't always pay attention to, but really help drive positive changes in health.
So what is the vision? You said that you guys have been, you've been here since 2014. So what is the vision for programs in the future? Is there a goal that you want to reach?
Yeah, so actually our organization started officially as LISH, or Long Island Select Healthcare, in 2016, but part of the other organizations we were part of came together to become this organization. So we were 3 smaller organizations that morphed into LISH. I think the vision for us is to provide care that, regardless of what zip code you live in or your ability to pay, that everyone gets the same quality of care. You know, how do you address the social determinants of healthcare? How do you look at someone's ability to pay their bills, feel safe at home, and not feel threatened, and not have those variables affect the care that you receive? I think that when you have trouble paying your bills, you're not going to be able to pay your pay for your medications. You may not follow up with your doctor. So if we can do the best we can to eliminate those things, then we're really going to enhance the value. You know, our big push is looking at patients under the umbrella of wellness. And wellness for us means medical, behavioral, social, and financial wellness. So if I can address all those pieces of wellness, then I think as my financial wellness improves, my medical wellness improves, my behavioral wellness improves. So they're all really interconnected. You know, a lot of healthcare is in a silo. You see your dentist, you see your primary care doctor, and you see a therapist, and no one ever talks, and you don't share information. But if we can kind of pull it all together so that we're all on it, in the, you know, on the same platform, and I think through that umbrella of wellness, it kind of helps us work together to really elevate the patient. And then if the patient's in charge, because they have understanding about their conditions, then I think that's where the real success and outcomes and quality of care falls along with it.
Is there a certain age range that comes to this organization, or is it anyone?
There's no age limitations. We are growing our pediatric practice. So our youngest patients, you know, probably 2-3 years old, up to, I think our oldest patient is a little over 100 years old. So we have a wide spectrum, but we're continuing to grow. So, you know, as a new organization, we want a bigger peds program. We want a bigger, women's health program, continue to be more robust and specialists. You know, we're fortunate we have an allergist, dermatologist, endocrinologist, neurologist, and pretty robust specialty program. So if we can keep building on that, so you can kind of get almost like a one-stop shopping, not that you have to actually go to each of the sites, but that the team is all sharing the records, then I think then you're not duplicating extra tests and extra labs and extra appointments if you don't need to. You can picture going to see a dentist in the morning and then afterwards go and see your primary care doctor to check your blood sugar, I think that's a real win-win for everybody.
And you mentioned that you're at different locations on the island. So where are those locations so people can find you?
So, yeah, thanks for asking. So unfortunately now we only have the three sites open, based on the pandemic. So our largest sites are in Riverhead, not too far from the aquarium, on Hot Dog on Plant Avenue, Central Islip on Carlton Avenue. We have smaller sites in Port Jefferson and Manorville and Smithtown that will slowly start to open up, I think, hopefully in the fall if things continue to go well. But those are our three biggest sites, and we're looking to kind of expand them and make them more robust as well.
And what are the protocols for people going in now? Is it just a face covering, or is it they need to be tested beforehand?
So, yeah, it's interesting. I think a lot of these things are still morphing, but what we've decided to do is anyone who has a scheduled appointment, they're getting two notifications prior to that appointment to know that if you have symptoms suggestive of a coronavirus, call ahead, because we're not telling you not to come in, but let's just prepare for those visits. So they get those two calls before the appointment. The signs all over the facilities to let them know that if they're sick, they're going to have a special waiting room, whether it's for a dental appointment, a medical or a mental health appointment, they will go to a special waiting room, kind of our triage room, so someone can go in there and specifically ask them questions. And then there's masks available, hand sanitizers, the chairs are divided up. So the waiting rooms, although they're very large, we don't want patients sitting too close to each other. And we just try to make sure everyone is protected as much as possible. So similar to what you'll see in some of the restaurants with the plexiglass and the spacing, the healthcare centers adopted a lot of that early on because we were open through the whole pandemic. We never closed, but we definitely had limited visits on site. And, I think that we're finding is because less and less people are becoming positive, we don't want to lose track of these great workflows that we've set up. So even though some of the last information from the governor was maybe about 1.something% of people positive recently, it's still those numbers add up quickly. So in hotspots like Central Islip and Brentwood, where one of our biggest campuses is, there were a lot of people with coronavirus and the COVID-19. So we still want to stay on top of that and make sure that people feel safe when they come in. In fact, you can even call ahead. So when you pull up, there's a special number that you have, say, if you want to wait outside in the parking lot and then come in for your appointment, you're able to do so as well.
And with the pandemic, was there anything that you guys were unable to do?
I think that it's interesting. The pandemic kind of made you think about everything differently, even how you practice medicine, even how you handle your own job, even how you handle your own family and all your own workflows. I think what we realized what we couldn't do is that you had to be careful of how you set up appointments, how you set up what could be done on site versus off site. So for example, when patients first came in for a sick visit, we went and we gave them a breathing treatment, a nebulizer right away because they had asthma. But then you quickly found out that increased aerosols and that may cause some issues. So you had to kind of tailor your work protocols accordingly. So I think you realize you had to be very nimble. It's not that you couldn't do things, but you had to minimize risks of things. Dental emergencies were actually more common than we realize. So we've seen 30 to 50 patients a week just for dental emergencies, cracked teeth, tooth pain, bleeding. I don't think we anticipated that. And I think the other thing that we found is that we try to be aggressive at the patients who were normally take their blood pressure medicines, their diabetic pills, that please stay on top of it. It's like, don't, if you still need to get the labs, let's figure out how to get it done for you. Don't neglect your preventive medicine issues and your chronic conditions, because our concern is as the area starts to lighten up that, you're going to have that heart attack and that poor blood sugar. Your depression is going to get worse if you're not taking your medicines or talking to your therapist. So I think that we realized that you had to be more aggressive about being proactive with your patients and creating that partnership and relationship to take care of each other.
It is good to know that there is a place that's abiding by all the health protocols, because I know a lot of people are nervous about going into somewhere that's a medical center right now, because they're like, well, what if I catch this here? I know that's a fear for some people.
Yeah, you know, and even the best, you know, hospitals, restaurants, all these centers that open up, you know, there's going to be things that could potentially happen. I mean, there's no system I think is perfect. But I think having some experience and having been open, and having been around the actively sick individuals who have had disease, I think you learn quickly what you can do and how do you kind of minimize any sort of exposure. But yes, I think that we were very fortunate that out of our 120 employees, only one was confirmed positive in terms of a staff member. So, you know, that number, I think, is pretty impressive that we went kind of above and beyond about trying to make sure things are clean. We have the equipment available, try to maintain the supply. So we have 90 days worth of equipment ahead of time, just in case there is another resurgence of this in the area. So you really can't stop thinking about being proactive for this during the pandemic.
And before we let you go, that website one more time in case people need to find you, and a number.
Sure. So the website is www.lishcare.org. And our main office number is 631-650-2510.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Plugged Into Long Island.
All right. Appreciate you reaching out to me. Thank you so much.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.